listening to the 90web.com podcast, and I'm your host, Julian. Well, we are back. This time, we're going to be discussing the Night Raid. Just the Night Raid. I think it's a big enough scene, and there's enough there. We can do a good episode on that. So, we're going to welcome Jim Fan back. Jim Fan, good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be here again and again and again.
And again and again. This is actually the second take we did. So, Warrior, good to have you back as well.
Thanks. Good to be on board.
And this time for take two, we actually have Skillet Dude, whom we did not have before. So Skillet Dude, it's good to have you here.
Hey, thanks.
All right. Well, I guess first, I'm not really going to try to go verbatim for what I said last time. But I think that kind of the angle we took last time was pretty good, where we first discussed how we think the Night Raid fits into this grand scheme of the story. And so I thought we'll go ahead and discuss that first. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay. Well, first up, how about Skillet Dude, since we didn't hear from you? I mean, we meaning the four of us. The audience, of course, didn't hear any of this last time. But if any of you must know, something happened and one of the files got deleted in a random fluke. So anyway... Yeah. We just get to have more fun discussing Prince Caspian. So Skillet Dude, I'm curious, how do you think the Night Raid fit into the story of Prince Caspian for the film?
I was kind of hesitant about it at first because it seemed like sort of a kind of a big change, kind of a drastic change. But actually, I thought it kind of fit in well. There wasn't much as far as like as far as character development, I guess. There wasn't a whole lot, but I liked how there was sort of like a sense of like an kind of like a dark urgency about things, and I liked how things were sort of more at stake and stuff. I liked that. So yeah, I liked the way that it was kind of fit in. I think it turned out pretty well, actually. So
yeah, I'd have to agree. It worked out really well. It's one of my favorite parts, my favorite action part of the whole movie, and one of my favorite parts of the movie. And for being something that's not in the book at all, I thought they executed it really well. And it works, and it works with the plot. And I like it. I like how it turned out.
Yeah, me too.
We're waiting on you, Warrior.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, just waiting for my time. I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect it either. I guess I'd heard rumors of it on Narnia Web, but I didn't see it as out of place. I've heard people saying that it wasn't, the character development was lacking in Prince Caspian, but I'm not so sure. Like, you see these action pieces. They're not just action. They lead the character. They show the character's development through the action scene, which I thought is a good way of doing an action scene rather than just having action looks cool. That it actually does something for the character, not just for the story.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Unlike the waterfall scene in Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe, which you could really cut it out of the movie and it wouldn't really make a huge difference. Like, it wasn't.
Yeah, the reason why it was added was to add tension and action.
Yeah. Picked up the pacing.
Wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
But this, with the altered plot, it is quite necessary. And therefore, I think that makes it work.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was the cinema or that, but people say, Prince Caspian's a really dark movie, and I'm like, well, the Night Raid's dark, but not in the more in the sense that it was hard to see things at times.
Yeah, it must have been yours. I never had a problem.
Yeah, I think maybe the lights were cinema a bit too much. I don't know, but yeah, I didn't think it was overly violent, or whatever, because it cut away before you got skewered or whatever. Like, whereas in Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe, the battle, you see some of the animals actually get impaled or whatever. You didn't really get that in PC.
Although you I have to say, the ending, I know even for me,
definitely.
And I was completely spoiled, that made me feel, you know, quite shocked and saddened at the end. That was just something I didn't expect. You know, I knew it would end badly, but I didn't know it would end in that way. So in a way, that is darker because there really isn't that equivalent. I mean, there is Aslan, but in Life of Pedro, but it's different.
Yeah.
But that was unexpected for me anyway. And
more intense than overly violent, I'd say. Like, intensely emotional. Like, you've caught up with these characters, and then they're, like, stuck behind, you know, they're trapped, and they can't get out, and, you know, they're dying, and it's like, you idiots.
And I think part of what made it more intense here is not just the fact that it's not tacked on to the end of the movie, because everyone knows the hero's going to survive at the end of the movie. But, so they know they're going to win there. But here, you don't know what's going to happen. And even from a Narnie Weber perspective, we kind of know, we know that they're going to survive, but we don't know how many Narnians are going to die. Even if we're really spoiled on this, then I had an idea, but we don't know how it's going to play out. So I think that's part of what builds with the tension here. And
also, I also like that sense of like loss because I sort of got the impression in the first one, at least, that, like, you know, at the end, everybody got turned back into their self and not stone anymore. But this one was like actual death and loss, and I liked that because it was sort of like a bitter thing. But at the same time, I liked how they portrayed that. So
And I definitely agree with you, Wari, on the character development. Especially with the little mini dialogue piece we have with Peter and Susan at the gate. But I was also thinking with how it fits into the story. I always, when I first heard about, I think I heard from Glumpuddle when he got back from Prague, he said, they're going to have a raid on the castle around the middle of the movie or something like that. And I thought, that could actually work because... keep in mind that in the book, there is a big battle before the Pevensies get there. And Trumpkin says, we all pinned our hopes on it. And it went horribly wrong. And there were lots of casualties. And there were short tempers afterwards. And so I thought, well, this could be that battle. It's just that they're putting the Pevensies into Caspian's timeline at an earlier starting point.
Yeah. And also, I have to say, the acting really helped, you know, drive the scene along. And I know we're just kind of jumping to the end. We're not talking about anything else. But, you know, especially at the end, it really, you know, without such profound acting, you know, without, you know, being able to see and feel the emotion through Peter, it may not have worked out the way they had wanted to, but that really helped, you know, along with everything.
I definitely feel this was Mosley's strongest scene.
Yeah.
I really did feel that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it also, I think it also showed, you know, that they're teenagers coming back to Narnia, and they're a bit disorientated at first, but then they come to the night raid scene, and even though Peter's pride got in the way, you know, caused some problems, and Caspian, they really stepped up to the plate and, you know, became the adult kings that they were meant to be. Even though, they made some wrong decisions. They were taking control. They weren't listening to other outside influences that might have not worked so well. You know, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think I think that, you know, it's definitely showed... It didn't seem completely unrealistic in how they played the characters, although still, I can't see Susan the Gentle throwing an arrow through an armored Telmarine.
Throwing an arrow.
Anyone doing that, let alone her.
Throwing an arrow. That's just weird. Like,
it's Monty Python.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
Hardly,
besides, who said that it would have been unrealistic for Susan to be without a throwing knife or something anyway. She wouldn't have had to throw an arrow. Yeah, someone said that they made a point that as an archer, she would have always carried some sort of hand knife or something with her in case she got in short range combat or whatever. And I was like, yeah, she would have had something. She wouldn't have had to throw her arrows, even if that was even remotely realistic.
Yeah, but it wouldn't look as cool, right? They had to make it look cool.
Right.
Throwing an arrow, that's not cool, that's cheesy.
I know.
you throw a knife, that's cool. Like, Lucy threw a knife and, you know, trained in the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
And then if Susan had it in Prince Caspian, you'd think, oh, well, she just, like, stole it off Lucy. And like, that's not very silly.
Yeah. Yeah, total sarcasm at that, you know, I'm just kidding.
even Legolas in Lord of the Rings, where he stabs the Uruk-hai and then shoots the one behind, even that, it was sort of, he's not throwing it. You actually, in theory, could reach forward to stab.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Although even Orlando Bloom said, and he said, when I did that, I just made it up on the go, and I thought, this is so cheesy, no way they'll put it in. I'm wondering, with the, you know, a lot of the, you know, the point where everything goes wrong, at the point where the, you know, Caspian deviates from the plan, and I don't know. At one point during the whole bit, I thought, because, you know, before we actually saw the night raid around Narnia, some of us wondered, are they going to kidnap the child? You know, is that part of
that?
Yeah,
that seems a little rough. But
because we had a photo of Caspian holding a sword at someone, and we weren't sure who it was.
What was in the
sixth
production blog?
People thought it was Chris Crispy holding the baby or something. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Something like that. And people were like, well, would he actually do that? And the general consensus was, no, he wouldn't. But, you know, you can never tell.
Susan the General didn't throw arrows at people either in the book, so. Well, I think...
Hit them with his dreadlocks.
Yeah,
Cena style.
And, I think... You know, I think as far as the, you know, films from 1977, well, I guess, I don't know, when did Empire Strikes Back come out?
1981.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, maybe it came out a year earlier for the Australians, I don't know. 80-81-ish, yeah. Around there. Okay. You know, I think that films from then on, any film that has the You Killed My Father is going to be doomed. And of course, Princess Bride ran with that.
Yeah.
But,
also, Toy Story too.
Well,
it's
yeah.
Toy Story too. Yes. Well,
that was the seriousness.
Yes. Well. Anyway, I think here they handled it about as well as they could with the Prince Caspian story, where it's not all about it's. You know, I think they ran with it about as well as they could.
It is, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Caspian,
yeah, I mean,
I am
how many ways can you say did you kill my father? I mean, it's sort of
exactly.
Like, yeah, like you
yeah,
can't really,
point,
really
you just
it.
You just got to forget everything else, and you just have to embrace it as it is. And like, I know it's been done before, but this is what it is.
It has
so
to
get over it.
Yeah. Nadia.
I think the bit that added the interesting dynamic that I thought was a very interesting piece they added in, which they never elaborate on. Lewis never tells us in the book, is whether Prudna Prismia knows, and in the film, she's almost as shocked as Caspian, and she can't really decide. It's almost like she can't decide who to point the crossbow at. But she can't really decide whether or not it's right to really keep Caspian from, you know, going through with this. She's really confused here, and I thought that kind of saved the scene in adding a really high bit of tension. And then, of course, I guess she screams and.
That's
Edmund drops
his injury.
Flashlight. Torch, sorry for you, warrior.
Sorry?
I said flashlight instead of torch.
Oh,
sorry.
Yes. Naughty.
Speaking of which, I remember when I saw the previous, it was the first bit of the night raid at Comic-Con, and they showed the torch, and I was so happy. I couldn't believe that they put that in there, you know, that what a way to use the torch and it having such a, you know, it being the thing that gets the last line in the book, and it's always kind of a funny thing, and then Edmund, you know, gets to use it.
Yeah, and a beacon.
I love that. It's one of my favorite parts. I love the torch.
Well, also, briefly mention, this is, I think, currently your avatar, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Very tell the, about everyone what it is.
Oh, this. Yeah, like going back to the previous, when I was at Comic-Con, you know, they had Ben Barnes and Andrew Adamson via satellite from wherever they were filming in Europe. And Andrew, before we watched it, Andrew told us that they had put some things in there. He said, there's some stuff in there that is not going to make it into the final film. That is just for fun. There was two bits in there, and I wasn't sure which one was the one he was talking about, because there was a bit with Reba Cheap and the cat, and the cat looked an awful lot like Puss in Boots. And there was also another part where it was Trumpkin and Susan, and they're standing in one of the towers, and Trumpkin falls over backwards, and Susan grabs him by his beard. And that got a big laugh, and I didn't understand why. And I had seen Lord of the Rings by then, but I'd only seen, like, once or twice, so I didn't realize that that was the joke. It was the Gimli joke, you know. And you know, I talked to the people who were there, and they're like, yeah. Well, I talked to my friends who were there, and they're like, yeah, that's the joke. Anyway, I was looking around the internet a few days ago, and I found a whole bunch of movie stills, a bunch that I had never seen before. And one of the ones that I found is, surprisingly enough, Susan holding Trumpkin by the beard, and he's kind of falling over, and she's grabbing him so he won't fall off. And that was so funny to see, because I had no idea they even filmed that. I thought that was, you know, completely just for fun, and they did film that, so maybe we'll see that on the DVD or something. That would be fun. Yeah. But anyway, if you want to see the picture, I have it on, it's my Avatar on Narnia web, where it's on my website. You can see it there.
Actually, I have a friend. I have a friend who's Hindu, and he actually told me that the way they pronounce it is Avatar.
Oh. Yeah, it does that's have, the word has Hindu origins or something like that.
Avatar the Last Airbender.
Okay, so, oh shoot, I had a really good thought, and it just flew out of my mind.
Shucks. That happens, isn't it?
It happens. It'll fly back. I'm trying to catch it here. Oh. You know, how do you think that do you think that Edmund was kind of sold short in this scene? Because I really did feel, I thought, oh, great. Poor Edmund. You know, he gets a little bit of sword fighting and looks great, but he's sort of doomed to just hold a camera and get shot at by the Marines.
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus of, you know, most of the teenage female population nowadays.
Hey.
Underused.
Really, buddy?
No, believe it or not, Chimpan, I hate to shock you, but I am, in fact, male.
I know that. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Finn. You're not the
Shocker,
only one
huh?
that. Only person. But yes, I know you're a guy.
Okay, good. My masculinity is secure.
Well, I think that the reason why he didn't have much to do in this one is because it's really like the sort of the last, you know, hurrah for Will and Susan or whatever. So I think
yeah.
that they were more focused on, because, you know, we wouldn't see them again for a long, long time if they come back
yeah.
or whatever. But
and I yeah sorry I think if Lucy had not had the whole Aslan thing, if that had not been such an integral part of the story, she probably would have had as much action as Edmund. That's my guess, because this is really Peter and Susan's story almost.
Right.
Edmund and Lucy are mm-hmm. coming back. We'll get to see them again. So I think they made the choice not to focus on them as much. And, of course, Lucy got a little bit more because she did have a very specific part to the story, but Edmund not so much. So I understand it, you know?
So is that why Susan tells Peter to check on Caspian before her brother?
Yeah. Forget her brother!
Because you brought that up, and I had never thought of that. Although it did register in my mind, oh yes, she likes Caspian. She sided with him during the battle planning stage, and she wants to make sure that Peter makes sure her boyfriend gets out safe.
Okay, here's Peter. You're going to send him back into the battle after your boyfriend. And forget about your brother. For all you know, he's chopped up and pickled in brine. You have never seen him the whole time, you know?
Ouch.
No one, everyone ignores him. They bad.
Pickled and brined. I have never heard anyone use that in person. I've never heard that before. Wow. Is that a California thing? Or is that a Chicago thing you just picked up?
Picked up.
I've never heard it, so I'm from California, so that's new to me.
Okay.
I think it was interesting. Oh, sorry.
No. Go ahead. It was just empty thoughts talking.
Okay, I was just
like usual.
Thinking. There was some discussion a while ago about how Susan being involved in the battle made sense in that she wasn't coming back in the Chronicles until a lot later, but that would make more sense for Lucy to be in the battle. And I thought that would have been quite good because she was more known as the valiant fighter. But there would have been
12.
An outcry from parents, wouldn't there? You know, like, oh no, there's like this 12-year-old running around killing people.
Yeah, I don't think it's something for the movie anyway. I don't think that's something they could have really done. Because can you imagine the response? I just got this horrible feeling, though, that we'll never get to see Lucy do anything like Lucy in the book, you know, until maybe Horace and his boy, but then she'll be grown up, just because she's always going to be the youngest, and they're always going to want to have her
like
be the sweet child. And really, if you're going to have the sweet child, it's Susan, not Lucy, but, you know, Susan is older and Lucy's younger, so that's kind of how it went together.
Lucy gets to shine with Corey Arkin in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. She gets to take on the, you know, all the crew puts their trust in her there, so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think if it had been Lucy the Gentle and Susan the Valiant, I think it would have worked out perfectly, but.
For the films.
For the films, yes, because then they would have had no reason.
Not Lucy the Bloodthirsty.
Hey, she did try to save Peter with, you know, Nickybrick and the Sorcery and Sudden Vengeance scene later.
She got out of it. Oh, she's gonna stab him.
And twist her arm. But
he was going to stab him.
Okay. Now, okay, let's talk about, we started to talk about the ending a little bit, and we again brought it up with, you know, wait for Caspian, I'll get him, you know. I thought, and when I saw that, I thought, what a good brother, you know. Caspian left, kind of messed things up, and, oh, sure, I'll stay
behind.
The least
I can do is make sure your boyfriend stays alive.
Yes, of course. But now, let's discuss the issue of Peter's chivalry, because that came up.
Yeah.
And it's been an issue on the forums. And, you know, the question was, it really came up from The Magician's Nephew, where Aslan asks King Frank, will you be the first into battle and the last to retreat? And here, Peter is certainly the first into battle, but he's not exactly...
that's the
contention here. Is he...
He is, though. Okay, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No. Go ahead. You've already said it.
Okay.
So
the last to retreat. He was the last to retreat. As far as the other people went, there was nothing they could have done. They were as good as dead, only they weren't dead yet. You know what I mean? There was no way they could have gotten out. He was the last person to leave, and I think you can see it in his eyes and his face. He was reluctant to leave. He didn't want to, and it was the others that told him, you need to go, and it was at the very last minute. I don't see anything... You know, the whole battle, you know, Peter, he messed up bad. But at this point, I don't really see anything dishonorable that he did at all. I mean, there's one thing with, you know, staying behind, you know, standing by your men. But when it comes down to that sort of situation, there is no earthly reason to go back when you know, you're going to, you know, there's no reason. There's nothing you can do to help them, and you're just going to be one more body. You know, you're more good to the other Narnians alive than dead. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, he should have decided to retreat a lot earlier.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah. I was going to say
something
like...
But I'm saying in this situation, when it gets to this point, there is nothing he could have done.
But they were retreating for a while because, of course, they start to leave with Glenstorm.
Yeah.
You know, and Glenstorm, well, good grief, he's the general, but he gets Susan out, and Peter waits for Caspian, and he's still waiting for Caspian to get out.
And again, they forget about Edmund.
Yeah. Peter, Edmund's the last. Hey, Edmund's the last to leave.
If it wasn't for the griffin, you know, he would have been dead too.
Yeah, and then he pulled a Gandalf and.
Yeah. Oh man, I laughed when I saw that. That was so.
I think it's still more similar to Back to the Future 2, where he, you know, just kind of falls off. He doesn't jump off. He just falls off the roof, and the DeLorean comes up. But, okay, Skillet Dude, what do you think? Do you think Peter is still Peter the Magnificent?
Well, yeah, I think so. But I mean, I thought that scene was sort of like, okay, well, I don't think he was like, you know, say the last one to, you know, to actually retreat. Just because, I mean, he could have handled it, you know, kind of like a different way. And I think going in by yourself without the help of Aslan and stuff or whatever, I think that was his point of like going, oh shoot, I totally screwed up. I could have handled this a lot better. And so I don't know. I think that was the reason why he sort of had that look, and not just because like there was, you know, absolutely nothing he could do. He could have, he just didn't. And so that's just my view on that. But
one of the things that came to mind with me was, of course, the Minotaur who's holding up the gate.
Ouch.
He's doing, yeah. What a tough guy. He's doing that for Susan and Peter and Caspian and any of the others who are able to get through. And so you can imagine, you know, he's getting shot. Peter goes up to him. Look, I really appreciate this, but I'm actually just going to stay right here. Yeah. I mean, it'd be denigrating to his sacrifice. And I don't know why people haven't criticized Reaper Cheap. I mean, I was thinking of Reaper Cheap, you know, if I'm one of the satyrs or one of the fawns or, you know, one of Glenstorm's sons, and I'm trying to go towards the gate and I see the gate close and Reaper Cheap goes right through, and I'm going, oh, I don't believe this.
I don't think Reaper Cheap would have done that. He's the kind of mouse who would have stayed.
Yes.
Boy, let's talk about Reaper Cheap now.
Can I just quickly say something about the Minotaur?
Sure.
I'm as cool as that idea, and as sad as it was with the Minotaur, you know, the portcullis or whatever they're called, falling down on him and, you know, killing him in the end. But holding it up for that long, those things weigh like the, you know, two trucks, as heavy as two trucks or something, for a Minotaur to hold that up. So stretching credibly, but that's all right in the moment, I guess. You don't think about that so much.
It's called adrenaline. He's a Minotaur. Yes. He's not a human, so he can explain away a different strength.
I guess you're right, because there's no counterweight anymore, because the counterweight is cut.
Oh, yeah.
So there wouldn't be any...
And besides, no, how much time, how long he was holding that anyway? I always got the impression it wasn't that long.
I think it's
a while, because... Yeah, he starts to hold it up, and then Susan and Glenstorm has to go through. She yells, "Go get my boyfriend!" Only, I'm paraphrasing. And Peter goes, "I'll get him!" And then, of course, Caspian comes out with Dr. Cornelius, and Peter pulls a Legolas and hops on the horse as they're running out. You know.
Yeah.
And, by the way, kudos to William Moseley. That was good.
Yeah, it was.
Probably took a lot of takes, though.
I think they only said about 3-7. I don't know, not a huge amount, but okay, about seven takes. I think it's admirable enough that he was riding on a horse in full armor with no saddle.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And no reins. And I'm kind of, okay, horsey, go. Of course, we all have we've seen the bloopers where the horse rears up and he just slips right off. At least I saw those. I thought they were hilarious.
I can't wait for the DVD. I don't have to say that.
So good.
I hope we get another big, long super reel.
I was just thinking how the courtyard, you know, like they made the courtyard so big, primarily because they wanted to hold the, you know, little battle in there. But when you read the movie companion, it's like, my goodness, they put so much effort into creating the outsides of the castle and how realistic that looks, just so they could have a really amazing battle that, you know, further the story, the characters, but also look great. I just thought that was dedication.
Yeah. And I want to see that miniature so bad, that bigotry they did. I am totally in love with those, and I would die to see that.
Since Narnia and The Lord of the Rings, I've become so impressed with the film crews in New Zealand.
Yeah,
they're just amazing. I remember I actually saw the making of The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise, where it was filmed in New Zealand. It wasn't filmed in Japan. And I remember at one point he said that he's never met more dedicated stuntmen in his entire career than the guys in New Zealand.
Go the Kiwis.
Yeah, go Kiwis.
Yes, definitely.
I'm not talking about the birds, though.
Yes, we know. No, I love the Kiwi birds. They're terrific. Have you seen the eggs? Have you seen those eggs? Those things are gigantic. You're such a super bird. Seriously, if anyone's not knowing what I'm talking about, go onto the internet and do a Google search or something to see the size of the eggs these little birds have. It'll make you say ouch.
Scrambled eggs.
Scrambled eggs, yes. Oh. Well, I didn't think we'd end the night raid talking about Kiwi birds, but I just let it run. You know, it's all. I just let the conversation go wherever it leads.
Yeah, you can't really do this in sequence. It doesn't work.
Yeah, no one wanted to do a recap.
Well, we'll just read it out loud.
They fight. Yes, they. Peter, Caspian, Edmund drops the flashlight. They flight. Telephone.
Sorry.
Not my end.
It's mine.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, is there anything else anyone wants to rant, rave, cheer about?
Were we going to talk about Reepa Cheep, or did we already cover that already?
Oh, let's not bash Reepa Cheep's chivalry. This is the courteous part of him coming out, not the chivalrous part. But yes, I do agree. I hadn't thought of that Reepa Cheep would have gladly stayed to die. I'm almost
so glad he didn't.
That would have stopped that voyage of the Dawn Treader, though, wouldn't it?
I know, but here's the thing. If they had anything where he decides to stay and fight and had Glenstorm grab him on the way out, then it would have come across. It'd be like Shrek, too, where you have Puss in Boots fighting and they grab him on the way out, you know?
Like, no, I want to stay!
Cowards! Cowards!
Wretch!
That was a good impersonation.
Like, good.
Thank you. I appreciate
no
it.
No man can bear. My good fortune not to be a man.
Oh! They have to have that line in there.
Obviously, yes.
They'll have to have it in there. I had forgotten about that line. It's my good fortune not to be a man. All right. Well, okay, so that's it. I think we did a good job.
I think we got everything.
Pretty good.
We couldn't get everything, but we got pretty much all that we needed.
Someone said, you know, are we going to have... Because we've been getting a lot of good feedback. And, you know, again, we love getting emails and comments on the website. And also, if you want to, you know, post a review on iTunes, you can do that. But we've gotten... I remember one or two comments saying, you know, are you going to do a character analysis episode?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think that, you know, we could do it any number of ways. And I think the commentary route that we're taking where each scene has a little bit of character, we'll discuss it there, you know, here and there, and discuss the scene as a whole. And if there's a lot of character development, like there is in this scene, then we'll address it there. But I don't think we'll probably do a whole character episode. There's news that's going to be starting to come out, and we'll have to get these done and cover that.
Yep.
Well, this was fun.
Yeah.
It was.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cheerio.
That's all for now, and until next time, I'm your host, Julian. Thanks for listening.